कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे राम 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 हरे हरे जय कृष्ण बलराम जय कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम जय कृष्ण बलराम जय राधा श्याम सुंदर राधा श्याम सुंदर राधे जय गौरानिताय जय गौरानिताय गौरानिताय जय गौरानिताय जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय प्रभुपाद नेताय गौरा हरि बोल हरि बोल हरि बोल नेताय गौरा हरि बोल विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतहिष्ठ वाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय श्री श्री कृष्ण बलराम की जय श्री श्री राधा श्याम सुंदर की जय श्री श्री गौरनिताय की जय श्रीमद् भगवद गीता की जय हिताय गौर प्रेमानंदे ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita, the most confidential knowledge, text 34. Manmanaha bhava madbhaktaha madhyaji mam. Namaskuru Mam Eva Eshasi Yuktva Evam Atmanam Matparayanaha Manmana Bhava Madbhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru Māme vaiṣyasi yuktvaivam Ātmānam matparāyaṇaha Manmanā bhava madbhakto Madhyājī mām namaskuru Māme vaiṣyasi yuktvaivam Ātmānam matparāyaṇaha Manmanā bhava madbhakto Madhyājī mām namaskuru Māme vaiṣyasi yuktvaivam Ātmānam matparāyaṇaha Mataji's. Madhyaji mam namaskuru. Mame vaishyasi yupvaivam. Atmanam matparayanaha. Matmanaha. Always thinking of me. Bhava. Become. Mat. My. Bhaktaha. Devotee. Mat. My. Yaji. Worshipper. Mam. Unto me. Namaskuru. Offer obeisances. Mam. Unto me. Eva. Completely. Eshyasi. You will come. Yuktva. Being absorbed. Evam. Thus. Atmanam. Your soul. Matparayanaha. Devoted to me. Srila Prabhupada's translation and purports also. Translation. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me. And worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Purport. In this verse, it is clearly indicated that Krishna consciousness is the only means of being delivered from the clutches of this contaminated material world. Sometimes unscrupulous commentators distort the meaning of what is clearly stated here, that all devotional service should be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Unfortunately, unscrupulous commentators divert the mind of the reader to that which is not at all feasible. Such commentators do not know that there is no difference between Krishna's mind and Krishna. Krishna is not an ordinary human being. He is absolute truth. His body, his mind, and he himself are one and absolute. It is stated in the Kurma Purana, as it is quoted by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami in his Anubhashya comments on Chaitanya Charitamrita, 5th chapter Adi Leela, verses 41 to 48. Deha dehi vibhedo yam neshvare vidyate kvachit. This means that there is no difference in Krishna, the Supreme Lord, between himself and his body. But because the commentators do not know the science of Krishna, they hide Krishna and divide his personality from his mind or from his body. Although this is sheer ignorance of the science of Krishna, some men take profit out of misleading people. There are some who are demonic. They also think of Krishna, but enviously, just like King Kamsa, Krishna's uncle. He was also thinking of Krishna always, but he thought of Krishna as his enemy. He was always in anxiety, wondering when Krishna would come to kill him. That kind of thinking will not help us. One should be thinking of Krishna in devotional love. That is bhakti. One should cultivate the knowledge of Krishna continuously. What is that favorable cultivation? It is to learn from a bona fide teacher. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we have several times explained that his body is not material but is eternal, blissful knowledge. This kind of talk about Krishna will help one become a devotee. Understanding Krishna otherwise from the wrong source will prove fruitless. One should therefore engage his mind in the eternal form, the primal form of Krishna, with conviction in his heart that Krishna is the Supreme. He should engage himself in worship. There are hundreds of thousands of temples in India for the worship of Krishna, and devotional service is practiced there. When such practice is made, one has to offer obeisances to Krishna. One should lower his head before the deity and engage his mind, his body, his activities, everything. That will make one fully absorbed in Krishna without deviation. This will help one transfer to the Krishna Loka. One should not be deviated by unscrupulous commentators. One must engage in the 9 different processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting about Krishna. Pure devotional service is the highest achievement of human society. The 7th and 8th chapters of Bhagavad Gita have explained pure devotional service to the Lord that is free from speculative knowledge, mystic yoga, and fruitive activities. Those who are not purely sanctified may be attracted by different features of the Lord, like the impersonal Brahma Jyoti and localized Paramatma. But a pure devotee directly takes to the service of the Supreme Lord. There is a beautiful poem about Krishna in which it is clearly stated that any person who is engaged in the worship of demigods is most unintelligent and cannot achieve anything at any time the supreme award of Krishna. The devotee in the beginning may sometimes fall from the standard, but still he should be considered superior to all other philosophers and yogis. One who always engages in Krishna consciousness should be understood to be a perfectly saintly person. His accidental non-devotional activities will diminish, and he will soon be situated without any doubt in complete perfection. The pure devotee has no actual chance to fall down, because the Supreme Godhead personally takes care of his pure devotees. Therefore, the intelligent person should directly take to the process of Krishna consciousness and happily live in this material world. He will eventually receive the supreme award of Krishna. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 9th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the most confidential knowledge. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahim Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruh Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Kindly repeat. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me, and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. The Bhagavad Gita is a very, very important book. It is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. Sarvopanishado gavo dogdha gopala nandanaha partho vatsa sudhir bhokta dugdham gita amritam mahat. The Gita Mahatmya explains that the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all these Upanishads and the other scriptures. If the Upanishads are compared to a cow, Sarvopanishado Gavo, then the milkman or Dogdha is Gopalanandanaha, that's Krishna. And the calf is Partha or Arjun, Partho Vatsaha, Sudhir Bhokta. But it's not the calf alone that drinks the milk of the cow. There is some milk remaining, and other fortunate people drink that. So apart from Arjun, those who are devotees of the Lord, saintly people, they are authorized or qualified to enjoy this dugdham, this milk, which is nectar, the nectar of the Gita, Gitamritam Mahat. So the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all scripture. In other words, it is the essential essence of all knowledge. The Bhagavad Gita has three divisions, each of six chapters, the first six, the middle six, and the last six. The middle six chapters are considered the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. In the middle six chapters, the ninth and tenth chapters, and particularly the ninth chapter, are considered the essence of the middle six chapters. And the essence of the ninth chapter is this verse that we are reading today. So, this verse, the 34th verse of the ninth chapter, 34th, right? 34th verse of the ninth chapter is the essence of the essence of the essence of the essence of all knowledge. Let's try to trace it out. Who can say essence of what? How many essences? How? Say that again, the whole sequence. No, start from the beginning. What is the first essence? Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all knowledge, of all Vedas, of all the Upanishads, of all knowledge in fact. So Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all knowledge. Then the essence of Bhagavad Gita is the middle six chapters. The essence of the middle six chapters, ninth chapter. The essence of the ninth chapter, 34th verse, which we are reading today. So today's verse is the essence of the essence of the essence of the essence of all knowledge. And what is that quintessence? That is to become a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. There is nothing higher than this, nothing superior to this, nothing more confidential, more esoteric than this. So this is considered the most important, essential, crucial verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Someone may say, well, what about Sarva Dharman Parityajya, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, Aham Tvam Sarva Pape Bhyo Moksha Ishyami Mashucha, where Krishna advises that we should give up all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. Isn't that the essence? Well, it is, but there's no difference between these two verses. The same verse, the 34th verse, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto, of the 9th chapter, is repeated almost verbatim except for two words in the 18th chapter. It appears as the 65th verse of the 18th chapter, and the Sarva Dharman Parityajya verse is the 64th verse. So in the Sarva Dharman Parityajya verse, Krishna is urging everyone to surrender to him completely, utterly, giving up all other forms of refuge and shelter. But how exactly to do that? What the components of the surrender are mentioned in this Manmana Bhava Madbhakto verse. So therefore, surrender is given a practical shape in this verse. And surrender is meant for what purpose? Ultimately, to love Krishna, to serve him, and to please him. This is the idea. So this has been mentioned here in this last verse of the 9th chapter. The 8th chapter discussed the position of the yogis, especially the Ashtanga yogi. And we saw how there were different paths. The path of light, the path of darkness. And the yogi has to select very cleverly the right time to depart from this world. But the conclusion of the 8th chapter was that for an ananya bhakta, for an unalloyed devotee of the Lord, the time of the day or night or the geographical location of his body at the time of death is immaterial, because the pure devotee is destined to go back to Godhead. That is sure. So having stated this at the end of the 8th chapter, now in the 9th chapter, Krishna has explained how to actually become such a pure devotee. So in the beginning of the 9th chapter, Krishna had contrasted devotion to Krishna with many other things. For example, worship of the demigods. And then he had, by such comparison, demonstrated that such other paths are very much inferior. That one should only, exclusively take shelter of Krishna. And then in these last few verses, verses 26 to 34 of the 9th chapter, Krishna simply glorifies the path of devotional service, and he also glorifies naturally the devotees of the Lord. And he has explained how a devotee is so dear to him that even if the devotee accidentally falls down but is very remorseful or repentant at such a fall down, then Krishna considers such a person to be a sadhu, a genuine devotee of the Lord. So in this way, Krishna is concluding his dissertation on the glories of devotional service of the in the 9th chapter here. And in the 10th, he will continue speaking about his opulences in order that this sense of devotion in our hearts may become stronger. Because we need nourishment of knowledge, of transcendental knowledge, to strengthen the devotion. But ultimately, this one verse is sufficient. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also glorified this particular verse as being the most important verse. It is a verse by which Krishna is giving protection to the whole world. He only instrumentally speaks to Krishna, but actually it is intended for the whole world. Arjuna is the via medium through which this most essential instruction is being disseminated for the benefit of the whole world. So in this verse, Krishna is saying four things. He's giving us four ways to practice devotion. And he's continuing from the 33rd verse, wherein he had concluded by saying, Anityam asukham lokam imam prapya bhajasvamam. That having prapya, having obtained this loka, this material world, which is anityam and asukham. Anityam means temporary, nityam is eternal, and anityam means the opposite, temporary. Sukham means happiness, and asukham means the opposite, that is miserable. So having obtained this temporary, miserable material world, what should you do? Bhajasvamam. You should become my devotee, worship me. So having stated this at the end of the 33rd verse, that is the previous verse to this one, now Krishna is illustrating how to do that. How should one become Krishna's devotee? In other words, what does it mean to become Krishna's devotee? What should one do to be called a devotee? And that is mentioned here. And Krishna is giving four very confidential instructions in this verse. This very chapter itself is called the most confidential knowledge, Raj Guhya Yoga. And the most confidential four instructions are given here in this verse. What's the first one? Manmana. Always think of me. The second? Bhava mad bhaktaha. become my devotee. Third, Mad Yaji, worship me. And the last, Mam Namaskuru, offer your obeisances to me. Mam Eva Eshyasi, Yuktva Evam, Yuktva Evam. Eva Eshyasi, Eshyasi means to return. Eva means certainly. If you do these four things, O Krishna, you will certainly return to me. Yuktva evam. If you're absorbed in such activities all the time, rest assured that you will come back to my abode. Atmanam mat parayanaha. So you should be with your body, mind and soul, your words, your actions, your thoughts should be constantly absorbed in me. And in this way, I promise you, you will come back to me. So there's an interesting analysis, because each of these four confidential instructions represents different grades of devotion or different levels of advancement in Krishna consciousness. The first one, Manmana, means always think of me. Who can always think of Krishna? Only a pure devotee. What to speak of a non-devotee? Even an aspiring devotee or a practicing devotee cannot always think of Krishna. A practicing devotee may sometimes think of Krishna, may many times think of Krishna, may very often think of Krishna, but to always think of Krishna is possible only for a pure devotee. So this stage represents the highest stage of pure devotion, when one should be absorbed all the while in Krishna. It is not merely a matter of doing some physical service for Krishna. That, of course, we must. Our senses should also be engaged nicely in Krishna's service. But it's not sufficient for our physical senses and our speech to be engaged in Krishna's service. While doing these things, one must also absorb one's mind in Krishna consciousness, in Krishna. That is ultimately the highest perfection. So Krishna is emphasizing, is urging, is giving us the highest platform and asking us to come to that platform. The residents of Vrindavan, for example, are the best examples of this instruction of Krishna, that one must always think of him. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatam tascha dridha vratah. That one should always be chanting his glories, one should with resolute determination be practicing Krishna consciousness. This mridanga, is it playing somewhere here in the quarters? Hard to focus the mind, it's a manmana, but so, yes, the residents of Vrindavan are actually the best examples of this. We see that they could not but think of Krishna. They were helplessly thinking of Krishna. We are helplessly thinking of sense gratification. And we try hard to think of Krishna. Sometimes we succeed and sometimes we don't. But our natural inclination is to think of this world, to speak about matters of this world, and to perform activities that are connected to this world. But the Brajabasis in Krishna's time were helplessly, naturally, spontaneously attracted to him, and they couldn't think of anything except Krishna. Even though they tried very hard, they were unable to do so. This is their qualification. Because Krishna is all attractive. He is so attractive that you cannot forget him. It is impossible to forget Krishna. Now someone intelligent may raise a question. If it is impossible to forget Krishna, if Krishna is all attractive and he's so attractive that you can't but remember him, then how is it that everybody has forgotten Krishna? The answer is because of Krishna. Without Krishna's illusory potency, it is not possible for the living entity to forget Krishna. Because the living entity desires to forget Krishna, so Krishna makes it possible for the living entity to forget Krishna. Otherwise, it is not possible, because Krishna is so overpoweringly attractive. You cannot forget Krishna. It's only Krishna being very merciful, wants to fulfill the desires of the conditioned living entity from time immemorial, that he fulfills this desire. Okay, you want to enjoy independent of me, you want to forget me, so I will give you this forgetfulness. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishtah mattah smriti jnanam apohanam cha. In the 15th chapter, Lord Krishna says that from me, seated in the heart as a super soul, come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So when one has a strong desire to serve Krishna and to become his devotee, then Krishna makes it possible also. So the heart of devotional service is strong desire to serve Krishna in a very favorable way. And therefore Srila Prabhupada here mentions in the purport that one should think of Krishna favorably. And he writes a whole paragraph on this point, and he gives the example of Kamsa, who was Krishna's uncle. Kamsa was always thinking of Krishna, but in the descriptions of pure devotees of the Lord in the scriptures, we don't read Kamsa's name. Kamsa's name doesn't appear in that list. Why? Because although Kamsa was always thinking of Krishna, he was not favorably inclined to Krishna, which is the characteristic of a devotee. A devotee just simply doesn't think of Krishna, he favorably thinks of Krishna. That's a very important distinction. And therefore Srila Rupa Goswami has defined pure devotional service as anya bhilashitam shunyam jnana karmadhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktir uttama. First class devotional service is that which is performed with a very favorable bent of mind. When the devotee is very favorably inclined to Krishna and without any propensity, without any other material desires, without any fruitive mentality, without desire for mental speculation and merging into the impersonal Brahman, one should serve Krishna like that. It means active service at the level of the mind, the words and the body. This is first class devotional service. What is the meaning of rendering service favorably or thinking of Krishna favorably? How would you define that? I say, well, I want to think of someone favorably. So to think of Krishna favorably, what does it mean? Yes. Which is beneficial to Krishna? Can we give Krishna benefit? Krishna can give us benefit, yes. For his pleasure, that's right. When we say that we should think of Krishna favorably, we mean that we should think, I want to give Krishna pleasure. I may or may not end up giving him pleasure, that's a different thing. But at least I must have the attitude, the sincere, pure attitude to want to please Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has made a very important distinction between pleasing Krishna and wanting to please Krishna. Please note this very subtle but very important point. One is actually pleasing Krishna, and the second is having the strong desire to want to please Krishna. If you consider the first, that is pleasing Krishna as the standard, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur argues, then Hiranyakashipu or Hiranyaksha were pure devotees of the Lord. Why so? Because when Krishna descends into this world, he descends for many reasons. And one of the reasons that he has battles with the demons is that he wants to engage in his fighting propensity, he wants to taste the veer ras, the mellow of chivalry. And it is his devotees from the spiritual world who descend, take the form of demons to engage him in combat so that he feels pleasure. Just like a king, he engages and employs some wrestlers. And to keep himself in good shape and for his own entertainment, he wrestles with them at certain times for his pleasure. So the Lord descends into this world and sometimes performs these combative activities. So Hiranyaksha was fighting the Lord, who was in the Varaha, the incarnation, and the Lord was pleased because he was able to get that pleasure of the Veeras. So does that mean that because Hiranyaksha pleased Lord Varaha, he is Lord Varaha's devotee? No. In fact, he was demoniac. His intention was exactly the opposite. He didn't want to please Krishna. He wanted to kill Krishna. So even though he ended up pleasing Krishna, but because his intention was to not please Krishna, so he is not considered a devotee. Similarly, you can think of Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, and all the other demons who fought with Krishna and gave him pleasure to enjoy the mellow of chivalry. On the other hand, if you say that pleasing Krishna is the standard of devotion, and anyone who displeases Krishna is not a devotee, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, and Mother Yashoda is not a devotee, because she would chastise Krishna so often. Sometimes she would run after him with a stick to beat him. Once she even tied him to the grinding mortar. Many times when he was playing with his friend, she would go out and reprimand him, scold him, and tell him, "Are you some street boy, some urchin who's an orphan? Don't you have any parents or a home? Don't you know that you have to come back for lunch on time?" And she would scold him. And Krishna would get afraid and want to come back home. And then his friends would threaten him after the mother left. "If you go, we are not going to take you back. So you take your choice, your pick. You want your mother's food or you want to play with us?" And then Krishna would be really in a dilemma. And he would continue playing for some time and go on. So many times it would appear that Mother Yashoda displeased Krishna. In fact, when she was feeding him one time, and this is a run-up to the Damodar Leela eventually, she saw the milk boiling in the stove when she was feeding Krishna personally. She immediately placed Krishna down and rushed to the stove. And Krishna was extremely angry. So angry that he bit his lips in anger and he smashed the pots in the room, spilled everything that was in the pots, and fled from that room. So Mother Yashoda made Krishna really angry. So by this definition, by this standard that you have pleased Krishna or not pleased Krishna, the Mother Yashoda doesn't seem to be a devotee. But exactly opposite is the case. So therefore Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the standard of devotion is not that you please Krishna, but the standard is that you want to please Krishna. And in this wanting to please Krishna process, you have to know how to do it. Not that you and I can concoct our own ways speculatively of pleasing Krishna. Therefore Prabhupada says here in the purport that is bhakti. One should cultivate knowledge of Krishna continuously. What is that favorable cultivation? It is to learn from a bona fide teacher. So one has to learn from a bona fide spiritual master who comes in the disciplic succession about how to cultivate the attitude of wanting to please Krishna. And this one principle of wanting to please Krishna very intensely is the underlying thread in all the different devotional services we perform. Without that, devotional service simply becomes mechanical and external. Of course, we do get some benefit because that service ultimately is being offered to Krishna. But if we have that attitude, then we make very swift progress in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is cautioning us here that even demoniac people like Kamsa were always thinking of Krishna, but that kind of thinking is not being recommended or spoken about here in this verse. What is being spoken about is the devotional thinking, favorable thinking, the thinking in love, the thinking of wanting to please Krishna. So we see that Srila Prabhupada was constantly absorbed in thinking of how to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world, because he knew that Krishna would be pleased. This is Gauranga Mahaprabhu's movement. And in the course of such thinking, he had so much anxiety. But he endured it. He did not seek his own pleasure. Rather, he only sought the pleasure of the Guru Parampara and Krishna. So, Manmana, the first instruction that is confidential in this verse, refers actually to the highest platform when one is always thinking of how to please Krishna. And this is best exemplified by the Brajabhasis, particularly the gopis. The gopis were sometimes so absorbed in Krishna that they lost track or awareness of the external world, and they would mix up and muddle up all their activities. When Krishna played the flute, then the gopis would rush from wherever they were, and sometimes they would dress upside down. What was meant to be down would be up, and up, down, and everything. Sometimes when they were told to churn the butter, they wouldn't realize that they were actually churning some mustard seeds and that the butter was somewhere else. They took the wrong pot and were churning. Sometimes they would do all kinds of strange things like this because their minds were totally absorbed in Krishna. When Krishna left Vrindavan for Mathura, the gopis would try with great effort to try to remove Krishna from their mind. But Krishna would not go. So that is the first and highest platform. In the 12th chapter of the Gita, Lord Krishna has also explained this kind of a sequence or hierarchy. And he says that first, always think of Krishna. If you can't think of Krishna, then practice the regulative principles of devotional service. If you can't do that, then work for him. If you can't do this, do this. If you can't do this. Like that. He gives a whole hierarchy. But he begins with saying, one should always think of Krishna. So this is the first step. And only if you're not able to do that, then we think of other things. But the next step, the next point that Krishna mentions here is also that a pure devotee does. It's not that because he's always thinking of Krishna, he doesn't practice devotional service actively. He does that. But because he's always thinking of Krishna, that makes his physical devotional services perfect. There are two people sitting and chanting the holy name. One is a pure devotee, the other is a neophyte devotee. Both are doing the same activities. So what is the difference? The difference is that the pure devotee is chanting with full consciousness and awareness of Krishna, wanting to please him, manmana. Whereas a neophyte devotee is chanting the holy name, but the mind is wandering, sometimes on this, sometimes on that. So for those who are not able to always think of Krishna, yes, we must at least bhava mad bhakta, we must at least become his devotees. What does it mean? It means that we must engage our senses in Krishna's service. So that's the second confidential instruction here. Sarvopadhi vinirmuktam tatparatve nalinmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchyate. So bhakti is also defined in the scriptures as engaging our senses in Krishna's service. All our senses. The senses are called rishika. And Krishna is rishikesha, the Lord and Master of the senses. By so doing, we become freed from all material designations and our mind becomes pure, spotless and devotional. Specifically, the 9 processes of devotional service, starting with hearing and chanting about the Lord as described by Prahlad in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, etc., is what is referred to here when Krishna says, Man Mana Bhava Mad Bhakto. So we are already engaged in so many activities. We come in the morning for Mangal Arati, we have darshan of the Lord, we chant the holy names in Sankirtan, then we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we chant our japa, and we do so many other such practical services. So this is Bhava Mad Bhakta, to become my devotee, to engage senses of the body, mind and the words in Krishna's service. The third is Madhyaji, that one must worship him. Worshipping means the process of archana, like offering him incense, offering him flowers, offering him bhoga to eat, and worshipping him and so on. So for those who cannot actively all the time engage the senses in devotional service, one must at least do this. And ultimately the fourth instruction that is confidential is Mam Namaskuru. That one must offer obeisances to Krishna. Much is said about obeisances. Offering obeisances in the scriptures has been described as a very, very important activity. Simply by offering obeisances to Krishna, millions of lifetimes of sins are destroyed. One actually develops affinity for Krishna's service. Even offering one obeisance to Krishna cannot be compared to millions of pious activities like doing the Ashwamedha Yajna and so on. You can't compare the two, because the merits of offering even one obeisance are so much more greater than the benefits of performing these pious activities, which are ultimately material. And what to speak of offering obeisances in Vrindavan? In the holy abodes, even lying down to sleep is like you get the benefit of offering obeisances. But that doesn't mean, of course, that we should sleep more than necessary. But that is the power of offering obeisances to Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami mentions that Akrura obtained the perfection of life not just by chanting prayers but also by offering obeisances. When Akrura came from Mathura to Krishna, having been sent by Kamsa, when he saw Krishna's lotus footprints in the sand, he stopped his chariot, descended, and in great ecstasy began rolling on the ground and offering obeisances to the dust. So every time we come to Vrindavan, or every time we leave Vrindavan, the first thing we should do when we arrive and the last thing we do before we leave should be to offer obeisances to the Dham. And we should pay a visit to the deities, offer our obeisances as soon as we come and also before we leave. And every day at least once, we should do this. We should also offer obeisances to the devotees, to Tulasi, and so on. Even when we go to bathe in the Yamuna, we should offer obeisances to her first, before entering into her waters. So Prabhupada is talking about the process of offering obeisances also. When such practice is made, he says, one has to offer obeisances to Krishna. One should lower his head before the deity and engage his mind, his body, his activities, everything. So one has to lower one's head, because offering obeisances makes us humble. There are two kinds of obeisances, or many kinds of obeisances actually. One kind of obeisance is to just fold your hands and bow your head. Another kind of obeisance is called the Panchanga Pranam, or the five-limbed pranam, which ladies generally do. And then there is the Dandavat Pranam, full pranam, where one actually is like a rod. Dandavat, danda means a staff or a stick. Vat means like. Dandavat means one falls down flat. And our entire body is in touch with the floor. That is Dandavat Pranam. So one can offer obeisances according to the situation. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also tells us that it is very important to offer obeisances. And we shouldn't offer obeisances, Rupa Goswami says, silently. We must chant some mantra. When you're offering obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, for example, we should chant his pranam mantra. To the deities also we can chant the pranam mantra, or we can just glorify the deities. Also, Rupa Goswami prohibits us from offering obeisances with one hand. This is something we observe every day in the temple. When devotees are chanting, you'll notice they will come and they offer obeisances, the half obeisance, that is the five-limbed obeisance, which the ladies generally do. But the men also sometimes offer when they have something in their hand, like the bead bag, and they'll extend one hand forward and then keep the other hand like this. But Rupa Goswami has specifically forbidden us to offer obeisances with one hand. We may keep aside the bead bag and then freely offer obeisances, or if we have to hold the bead bag, it should be such it doesn't contact the floor, and then we should offer full obeisances, or even if it is a half obeisance, then we should keep the bead bag out, but the hand should be properly positioned. So by doing these things, these four things, Krishna is assuring us of his of a place in his Goloka Vrindavan. So we are reserving our ticket, reserving our place in the spiritual world. This is such an important thing. It seems so simple, but still it's so confidential, because most people, even great so-called scholars and commentators, do not understand the simple thing, because they do not understand who is Krishna. As Prabhupada is mentioning in the purport, they distinguish between Krishna's mind, Krishna's body, and so on. So they never understand the right conclusion, which is stated here in this verse, that we must become pure devotees of Krishna. Prabhupada criticizes one great politician in India, who is also recognized as a scholar, when he said that when Krishna says, surrender to me, worship me, he is not talking about himself, Krishna, but he's talking about the impersonal within him. So Prabhupada used to get very upset at such statements, and he said, this person doesn't know that there is no difference between Krishna's within and without. And therefore he quotes here from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta to say that Krishna is absolute, and there is no difference between Krishna's mind, Krishna's body, Krishna's words, Krishna's abode, and so on. So with this understanding, in full devotion, with an attitude to please Krishna, we should do these four things. Manmana, to always think of Krishna. Bhavamad Bhakto, to become his devotee by engaging all our senses in his service. Madhyaji, to worship him. And fourth, Mam Namaskuru, to offer obeisances to him. And with this verse, Krishna concludes the ninth chapter. And the tenth chapter, the opulence of the Absolute, begins after this. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes. Who was that politician? Radha Krishnan, who was a former president of India. Yes. The question is that of these four instructions, the first one is to serve Krishna with full consciousness, and is it that the second one is just simply to do it physically? Not exactly. Even those who engage the senses in devotional service are meant to do it in full consciousness, but they may not be able to always do it. That's the point. They are still in the stage of practice, whereas the manmana stage refers to the stage of perfection. Whereas a Bhava Mad Bhakta, become my devotee, refers to the devotee in the stage of practice. You know the saying, practice makes perfect. So by continuously rendering devotional service, by engaging our senses in Krishna's service, one day we will attain that stage of perfection, when we will always be able to think of Krishna. So even in our regular devotional service, our endeavor should be to also fix the mind on Krishna, even as the body, mind, the body and the words are being used in Krishna's service. That should be the way we train ourselves. Any other question? Of course. The question is Krishna not saying that we should do all these four things at one time? Yes, of course. The highest always includes the lower. When we say you should do the topmost, it doesn't mean you should stop the other things. It's just that those things become more meaningful, those things become more effective, it is done more purely, more devotionally, that's all. The manmana bhavas, the manmana stage devotee is doing all the other things, but with full consciousness and full devotion. Any other point? Yes, Mataji. Is there any particular reason that the lady cannot do the Dandavat Pranam? It's just the vidhi. It's just the regulation, because it is more, shall we say, proper, because there are always so many other people around, there are men around. So it is just more dignified to do it in that way, and Krishna accepts that. Yes. Yes. The question is that, in brief, how do we know that we are pleasing Krishna? Right? That's the essence of the question. By pleasing Krishna's representatives. Because we can't see Krishna in front of us except in the deity form. And yes, sometimes the deities may reciprocate with us, but perhaps not always, and not for everything. We need certain practical instructions, practical guidance. And that is there in the scriptures. That is why the Guru Parampara is there, to give us practical instructions on what to do, how to do, when to do, and so on. Srila Prabhupada has given us a whole system, a whole life to lead, with everything worked out for us. All we have to do is to follow it nicely, and we'll please the Guru Parampara. Then Krishna is pleased. And then automatically there will be personal reciprocation that will come from within the heart. The more one matures and advances in devotional service, that reciprocation automatically happens. But the essence is to follow, to be obedient, and everything comes as a result of that. Anything else? Yes. In the case of people working outside in a job, how can they think of pleasing Krishna? Principle is the same. The principle is that we know that we are doing this for Krishna. One can try to practice Nishkam Karma Yoga, at least being detached from the fruits of one's professional work, and dedicate those fruits to Krishna. In the 9th chapter, in this section of verses itself, Krishna has said this. Having talked about Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam, which is the 26th verse, which actually indicates a very exalted state of devotion, just like the Manmana in this verse. This Patram Pushpam verse talks about a devotee who is very high. But right after that, when Krishna talks about Yat Karoshi Yad Ashnasi Yad Juhosi Dadasi Yat, Yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurishma madarpanam. From pure devotion he comes to nishkam karma. He says, well, if you can't do that, then at least do this. So whatever one does, yat karoshi, whatever one eats, yat ashnasi, whatever one worships, yat juhosi, whatever one gives away in charity, dadasi, do it for me, Krishna says. So we have to offer everything we do to Krishna, keeping in mind, it is important that at the back of the mind this consciousness has to be there. We are doing it ultimately for Krishna. Any other questions? Yes. The question is that Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu has urged us to preach to everyone, whereas in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna in the 18th chapter forbids us from preaching to those who are faithless. How does one reconcile this apparent contradiction? There are a couple of ways to look at it. One is that, yes, Krishna is fairly stern and strict in the Bhagavad Gita, but in his incarnation as Gauranga Mahaprabhu, he is very magnanimous. Therefore he says, just preach everyone. Patra apatra na dekhi, sthana sthana na dekhi. Don't look at the place, the circumstance, the time, the person, the qualification. Just chant the holy name everywhere and bring everyone in the fold. So this is Mahaprabhu's special contribution. He doesn't demand anything. He doesn't demand qualification, he doesn't demand culture. He just demands that one has some faith to receive the holy name. That's all. That is, in short, the answer. At the same time, Mahaprabhu's method is to not speak esoteric things to the faithless, but to speak the simple things to make them chant the holy name, give them prasadam, speak basic philosophy. That was also Srila Prabhupada's method. Even on Radhashtami, he would many times speak only of body and soul, knowing that there may be people in the audience who may not understand. So he would keep it very, very simple. So even in our preaching movement, we do have consideration of time, places, and circumstance. We preach in different ways. If we see that there's a group of people who are faithless, then we would speak in one way. When we are in the midst of devotees only who are faithful, then we will speak in another way. Okay, one last question, yes. The question is that in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, we see that he delivered many people. He instantly gave them love of God. And why don't we get instant love of God? Right? That is our modern disease, isn't it? We want instant everything. Fast food, fast communication, instant this, instant that, everything instant. Instant everything. Because Mahaprabhu wants us to be ready for that. If we get something too easily, then we take it cheaply. So Mahaprabhu is giving us the easiest process, the most sublime process, and all we have to do is to accept it. Just see how easy he has made it for us. You don't have to go to the Himalayas. You don't have to become a big Sanskrit scholar. You don't have to perform all kinds of austerities. You don't have to take sannyas. But just some simple rules you have to follow and just chant the holy names. That's all. So what has he asked us to do compared to what he asked others to do in the previous ages? So compared to that, he has made our spiritual life so much more easier. And he forgives offenses. Whereas in the early ages, offenses were considered very seriously. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Gaur. Hari Krishna.